Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spark Radio Show, filled with strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge that may be the spark of a better solution to ignite a positive change in your life. The number to call if you have questions for Melanie or any of our guests is area code 347-215-8390. Now, here's your host, Ms. Melanie.
Well, hello and welcome to or welcome back to Spark Radio. I am your host, Ms. Melanie, and as always, it is my pleasure to be with you. And I thank you for investing the very valuable minutes of your life to be here to learn about the sparks that ignite positive change and solutions in your life. Spring is finally here in the Midwest United States. It's been a long time coming. Without Mother Nature, just sort of forgot. So there's some sniffles and some early allergies going on, so I hope wherever you are, you're healthy. And I'm very excited about tonight's guest. Stephen Snyder just had his book, Leadership and the Art of Struggle. Publication date was March 13th. And it is a powerful and amazing book. And since I don't have his bio right in front of me at the moment, I'm just going to jump right into our interview and say welcome, Stephen.
Hey there, Melanie. How are you doing tonight?
I am doing well. How are you?
Really well, thank you.
It is such a pleasure to have you here. I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to do this interview with me.
Well, it's my pleasure, Melanie. Looking forward to it.
Awesome. Well, let's get started with my usual first question, which is, Stephen, what would you like my listeners to know about you, or who is Stephen Snyder?
Well, let me just give you a brief thumbnail. I was born and raised in Philadelphia and went to school and worked on the East Coast for a couple years after business school, and then very fortunate to have the opportunity to work with Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer at Microsoft back in the early 80s, and learned a lot from Bill and Steve during those 5 years, and then moved on to study psychology at the University of Minnesota, where I got my PhD, and then did some leadership development work for a while, and then founded a company that ultimately went public, and I was the CEO of that company, Net Perceptions, for 5 years. Did a good amount of community service work, taught in business school, and formed the Snyder Leadership Group to do executive coaching and helping leaders get better. And several years ago, I started the research program that led to this book.
Which is a very exciting book, I might add.
Well, thank you.
I haven't finished it yet because it is very engaging. There's actually opportunity to practice some things in there. So I'm taking my time working through it. And I also wanted to talk a little bit, being from the Midwest, and we'll talk probably a little bit more too, but you are currently living in the Minneapolis area, and we'll talk just for a minute about the work that you're doing at St. Thomas.
Well, I'm an executive fellow at the University of St. Thomas here in Minneapolis, and my work there was primarily around my research. I was appointed as an executive fellow to do the research that led to this book, and so that is my focus at St. Thomas.
And that research led you down an interesting path that resulted in such a powerful work that can really make a difference, not only to people with a leader title, but people who see themselves as leaders, who, whether it's a leader of your family, whether it's a leader just of your own life. And I wanted to point that out at the beginning because sometimes people think, well, I don't have a title that's a leader, so then I probably won't find value in this book. But I really believe that regardless of whether it's in your title, there's absolutely some value here. Would you agree?
Absolutely. In fact, the model that I use that we'll talk about, the struggle lens, is very much egalitarian. It really doesn't differentiate between followers and leaders as most leadership models do. And really it invites anyone who sees themselves as wanting to make a difference in some way to call themselves a leader, because that's what we all are.
I love that explanation. Stephen, what was the seed idea or experience that led you on this journey that culminated in your book, Leadership and the Art of Struggle?
Well, it started really when I was working at Microsoft, and I was watching Bill Gates grow as a leader. And and also really embellished when I became the CEO of my own company. And, I realized that struggle is a natural part of leadership. But I think society has really brainwashed us into thinking that struggle is bad. It's something that shows a sign of weakness or incompetence, something that we should be ashamed or embarrassed about or even denied. And, when we remove those shackles that society has placed on us, we see that the times that we struggle are the times we tend to grow the most. And really, that's why I set out upon this research program, to learn how great leaders grow through the most intense times of challenge and adversity, and to give us all hope that we all struggle. And that is a natural part of leadership. And if we learn how to struggle more effectively, more productively, and quite frankly, engage in the struggle and embrace it, then we will tend to grow more as leaders, and we'll also have more fun at leadership.
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the things that excited me about your book, is that the piece that most leaders don't want to share, their mistakes, their struggles, their failures even, is truly where the greatest growth can occur if people are willing to look at the experience that way. One of my favorite books a number of years ago with John Maxwell's Failing Forward. And that was the first book that really looked at failure in that light and examples of people who took their failure, learned from it, and moved forward. Another thing that excites me in your book is the strategy, is the model that you have, first of all, which we're going to talk about, and then the specific strategies for how to actually master the art of struggle. Such a wonderful title or concept. So there are many different ways to define leadership. And as I was reading the introduction to the book, you shared, and I may not pronounce his name right, Joe Baradacco's insight, and it said, "Leadership is a struggle by flawed human beings to make some important human values real and effective in the world as it is." I'm curious about why you chose to include this particular definition.
Yeah, I think of it more as a model or a concept as opposed to a definition. But I think people can see it as a definition, so I see your point. I think this, when I first heard this, Joe was a classmate of mine and now teaches at the Harvard Business School. And he taught a class looking at leadership through the lens of literature. So in the class, instead of using case studies like they normally do at the Harvard Business School, they used works of literature like Death of a Salesman or Things Fall Apart or A Man for All Seasons. And he came up with this model after observing all of the episodes of leadership in the works of literature that they studied. When I heard Joe's lens, it was a breath of fresh air. It was a new way of starting a conversation about leadership. And so I went out and I tested it, and I asked people that I respected for their leadership, I asked them to react to that. And many really embraced it and found it invigorating and really resonating immediately. Others, it gave pause, and what I found was that when we started to talk about it, it was a new way, a new voice for talking about leadership allowing us to have conversations about leadership that we wouldn't have ordinarily had. And it was the background that I did all of my research. I began by asking them what they thought of this concept and then asked them to tell me these exceptional leaders that I interviewed. I asked them to tell me about the times when they experienced their most intense struggle. So I used this model or concept as the foundation or the framework to begin this conversation. And I found that inevitably it led to some incredibly interesting places. And so really I used this as a frame for a new angle for exploring new possibilities about leadership, stuff that we don't talk about normally about leadership, because we, as I mentioned before, we normally don't talk about leadership as a struggle. But it is, and I think this framework gives us a new way of having that conversation.
And I would agree and add that it honors the value of the struggle that leaders face. And that concept of the struggle lens and looking at leadership through that lens can give people a very different perspective.
Exactly.
Whether you're a new leader or a veteran leader.
Exactly. Let me just give you one illustration. We talk about, in normal definitions of leadership, we talk about leadership is all about accomplishing goals. Well, when you're going 90 miles an hour to accomplish certain goals, we often forget about the underlying values that are implicit in those goals. And we often question whether our methods for achieving those goals are consistent with the values. And sometimes we have to make trade-offs as to what's important and what's less important in any situation. Well, the Badaracco lens, the struggle lens, gives us a way of asking ourselves, when we get into difficult situations, which values do we want to actualize through our leadership? Which values do we want to make effective and come to life in this situation, and allows us to have a conversation about what are the underlying goals and ask ourselves, are they the right goals? Many times when we're in a difficult situation, we're actually finding that we're in service to the wrong goals. And this allows us to up periscope and look around and say, okay, maybe we should examine and look at some different goals that are more consistent with our values.
And those, are, again, are two pieces that are rarely dealt with when it comes to effective leadership, strategic leadership, and being able to take who you are as a person into the experience. And before we move to the principles in your book and the model of the pathway to adaptive energy, I'd like to ask you about the organization and the interactive approach of your book. What were your goals behind, or your thinking behind how you designed the book?
Well, Melanie, what I wanted to do is have the book be a step-by-step guide or an advice for navigating through a challenging or difficult assignment or project or role in an organization, or maybe even preparing for one. And so what I do with the book is create a framework, first of all, by dispelling this myth that struggle is not a four-letter word. It's not something to be embarrassed about or think that it's bad, but rather a natural part of leadership. And once we remove that assumption, then we can begin to learn how to channel our energy adaptively. Because so often when we get into difficult situations, when we struggle, we wind up thrashing. We wind up, our fears take hold, sometimes our emotions get in the way, and we wind up doing things that are counterproductive to us or even may undermine the very goals or values that we hope to achieve. And so what the model does is it helps us take a step back and look at what we're trying to do and really channel our energy most effectively. And the book is a step-by-step guide for how to do that. And I do that through a set of approaches. First of all, I use stories because I think really it's the stories of people who have gone through these difficult experiences. We all can relate to them, and we know through these stories that we're not alone. Because so often we think, as we continue this myth that struggle is bad, we think that we're the only ones who struggle, and that's just not true. We're not alone, and the stories help teach us that we aren't alone and that everyone struggles. This is a universal rite of passage, and so the stories help us break through this myth. Also, the stories help introduce some of the key concepts in the book and lay the groundwork for the advice or the practices so that when you see the practices or the advice, they come as a natural outgrowth from the stories and the concepts. In other words, it all flows naturally. And, I like to think about it all as weaving it into a tapestry that is hopefully engaging and also informative to readers.
Well, and I, from just my experience with what I've read, I would say that you were successful in doing that. And you're right. We do think in stories. We communicate in stories. So having that as a basis to relate to in applying the strategies and the practices that you have gives it a richer meaning than just the practices and strategies alone. So speaking of that, through your research about the struggles of the 151 leaders that you interviewed, you discovered a pattern of three fundamental conditions or defining elements, as you called them, that seem to resonate in each struggle. Could you talk for a little bit about what you observe as those fundamental conditions?
Yes, as I sifted through, there were 151 episodes from a total of 93 leaders in my study, and from all of that, all of those stories, far more stories than I actually published in the book, I examined all of those stories and found that these three underlying conditions or elements of struggle were evident in every episode, in every story. And those three conditions were, first of all, something was changing. And second, that change created a natural set of tensions. And third, those tensions threw the leader off balance. So let me explain a little bit about what I mean by each of those. First, with respect to change, something is changing. That could be we go into a new role as a leader. We're in a new situation, and that could be the change. Or the change could be that we envision that our organization needs to make some change, and that's the change that we're referring to. Or it could be that something in the environment is changing, like a competitive move or a natural disaster or something, that something surprising happens, or even something surprising happens to us, locally, like, our boss cancels our favorite project, that's the change that really triggers the struggle. But something is changing, and those changes really trigger the tensions that throw us off balance. So let me talk a little bit about the feeling of off balance for a couple of minutes, and then we can segue into the tensions in a couple of minutes. But really, the feeling of off balance is you could feel this feeling of being off balance in many ways. You can be emotionally off balance, like you can be angry or enraged, or you could be depressed, or you can be, filled with self-doubt and be out of balance that way. Or you could be physically out of balance, like your sleep might be disrupted. You might be not able to get to sleep or wake up in, you know, early in the morning with fits of, you know, anguish. Or you know, one female executive told me that she was so stressed that her hair started falling out. So we all experience this stress and these this off balance in different ways. Some experience it physically, some emotionally. Some people experience it spiritually as a crisis of purpose or meaning. You know, what's going on here? Who am I? And we are spiritually off balance. And some of us are, you know, sometimes socially off balance. We undermine these relationships that are so important to us. But the problem is that very often when we're in the midst of all this swirl, when things are swirling around in this chaotic ooze that we're mired in, we're not aware that we're off balance. And so one of the key lessons in the book is to pay attention. And when you feel that feeling of off balance in one of those many ways that I described, take a step back and stop and pause, because that's the moment of awareness. That's when we begin to recognize that we are off balance and we can do something about it. And the first thing we need to do is we need to get ourselves back to become more centered and more able to handle and cope with the challenges and deal with the stress that we're dealing with. And so we begin to engage in these practices, these mastery practices that I was talking about in the book.
Thank you for explaining the different kinds of ways or ways that people can become off balance, because we often don't think of all of them. I know in a pre-show call, we talked about emotional or amygdala hijack, when there's an intense emotion or stress, when leaders are feeling the threat, the danger, and that part of the brain takes over and our ability to reason and be rational is compromised because the blood flows in the survival area of the brain, and that can lead to some different kinds of decisions. And also the things like that you mentioned related to sleep, to social connection, to spiritual health, all of those can be impacted as well. You're absolutely right. And so when becoming aware of looking for that sense of being off balance in any area of your life and taking that time out to reflect can lead to better decisions and better problem solving going through that struggle, so that we can become more successful and learn through the process. So the three pieces, those three defining elements, as you described, that happen in a struggle, and for those of us who are in leadership roles, if we stop and look at our own struggles, we could be able to identify those defining elements as well. So once we know we're in a struggle, we know there's a challenge that we need to deal with. The fact that this is designed to take you step by step through that process can be a relief. So let's first take a look at the pathway to adaptive energy model that lays the groundwork for the book. Can you talk a little bit about how that model came to be?
Yes, well, it really was a reflection or synthesis of all of the strategies and practices that I heard the leaders teach me about when they told me their struggle stories. Because really what these practices are is the synthesis of all of their experience. It's the synthesis of how did these leaders, you know, these number of CEOs, number of large company executives, and also many small business owners and people who work at large and small companies, and also the nonprofit and government sectors. And from all of that, I pieced together the strategies that these leaders use to navigate through these difficult situations. And really, the pathway to adaptive energy, that chart, is all about the overview of how do you get through a difficult or challenging situation. And it starts by recognizing that we are going through a difficult situation, that we are in the midst of a struggle, and that we have to consciously and proactively engage this quality that I believe is latent within all of us, which I call adaptive energy. Now, let me illustrate what adaptive energy is by a very simple example. I mentioned it before. You know, your boss comes in and says, you know, I'm canceling your favorite project. Basically, there's a number of ways you could react to that. One way is to immediately tell her that she's absolutely made a mistake, and you're absolutely enraged that she should have the audacity to make this mistake, and that she should definitely rethink this because she's obviously wrong. Now, obviously, that's an unadaptive approach. That's not a pathway that's going to get the most mileage out of the situation. A much more adaptive approach is to engage in a conversation with her and learn about her reasons for why she made the decision that she did. And it could be that that conversation sets off a conversation that maybe she had in mind some other opportunities that she thought were better for you. Now, obviously, if you start screaming at her and telling her that she's wrong, she's not going to bring up these other opportunities that may be better for your career. But if you do have this adaptive kind of conversation that, you know, deactivates, as you said, the amygdala, deactivates that fear response, gets rid of all that baggage that's getting in our way, and really engaging in an adaptive response, you can explore these new possibilities without all of our fears getting in the way. And so really the whole book is about how best to engage this quality and develop this quality that I call adaptive energy. And really I talk about these three sets of practices, the grounding practices, the exploring practices, and the deepening practices, as a sequence of or chain of processes that we go through to learn how to cultivate our adaptive energy, learn how to work with it. The first and most important thing is the grounding practices, because as I mentioned before, during a struggle episode, we're off balance. And so the first thing we need to do is we need to get back on balance. We need to center ourselves. And we need to engage our reflective mind. As you said before, we need to pause and slow things down. Because so often, as you pointed out before, you know, our amygdala, the fear response, takes over. That's, I call it our automatic mind. And in the mindfulness tradition, they call it monkey mind, because that's what it is. It's our fear responses, our baggage, our pre-existing worries and fears for the future that are getting in the way. And we have to get those things out of the way. And when we do, when we slow down, we can start to see the situation for what it is. It stops being a chaotic swirl and starts making more sense to us as we untangle the tensions that are going on. We draw ourselves a tension map. That's one of the concepts in the book, to begin making sense out of this chaotic swirl. And we enter what I call a growth, well, I don't call it a growth mindset. I use Carol Dweck's term, a growth mindset, to engage in the realization that this is all about a growth journey. It's all about a journey that is about learning and developing and growing as a leader, as opposed to proving our existing capabilities. And, you know, this is wonderful recollection of this wonderful phrase that my friend Frank Audette used to say when I worked with him at Microsoft. He used to say, "I reserve the right to be smart, to wake up smarter every day." And, you know, it reminds us that we don't know it all. We can continue to grow and learn as leaders. And if we recognize that that's what we're on, this growth journey, then we enjoy it more and we get more out of it. So that's what I talk about when I talk about the grounding practices. And then once we do that, we can then begin to explore these new possibilities that are opening up to us. And one thing I talk about in the book, and I think it's really important, is getting these blind spots out of the way. Because so often our blind spots interfere with our effective performance. And I found that there are five blind spots in different episodes of Leadership Struggle. And let me just illustrate just a couple of them. One of them is the experience blind spot. A really good example of that is Ron Johnson when he came from Apple to JCPenney. What the experience blind spot is when our past successes get in the way of our experiencing our current situation, and they bias us to use all the strategies that were successful in the old situation, apply them indiscriminately into the new situation with sometimes disastrous results. And that's what happened to Ron Johnson when he took the same strategies that he applied at Apple and moved them to JCPenney. One of the things he did was he deployed this disastrous pricing strategy at JCPenney that showed a lack of understanding of the customer. And someone asked him before he rolled it out, someone asked him, you know, why don't you do a test of this in just a couple of stores before rolling it out to all 1,100 JCPenney stores? And he said, we didn't test at Apple. Well, you know, for crying out loud, you know, this is the overconfidence, this is the lack of humility, and this is our automatic mind, which sees all of the similarities but doesn't see the differences. And we have to force ourselves to see the differences by engaging this reflective mind that I was talking about before, because our reflective mind is lazy. We have to train it to get into the situation and help us see, in this case, the differences compared with what we would normally see, which is the similarities. So that's an example of the experience blind spot. One more blind spot that I just want to talk on very, very briefly, and we all have found this, I'm sure, you know, I call it the conflict blind spot. We get into a conflict situation when we become absolutely convinced that we're in the right and the other person is wrong. Well, what we have to do is we have to take a step back and recognize that we're distorting our reality when we think that. We have to recognize that this other person has a set of values that they feel are important and that they want to actualize. And when we understand that's what they're really trying to do in the way that they see as appropriate, we can take a step back and have a conversation that finds the common ground. And that's exactly what happened with Hubert Joly and Dick Schultz as the situation played out at Best Buy. I just had a piece published today in Fortune, on the Fortune blog, to really illustrate how Hubert Joly really used and crafted his ability to empathize and have compassion for Dick Schultz and respect Dick Schultz's dignity to allow Dick to really explore the possibilities that were available to him, and actually they found a really good solution. So those are the two examples of blind spots that come in when we're, again, what we're doing is we're using our adaptive energy to first become grounded and then seeing new pathways, new opportunities as we get rid of our blind spots and then begin to continue deepening this adaptive energy that we've learned about and are beginning to use, and really find that the more we use this adaptive energy, the more we tap into this quality that's within us, the more effective we become as leaders, the more fulfilled we feel as leaders, the more we're going to use our adaptive energy. And so it becomes this virtuous cycle where more begets more. And adaptive energy, that's why I look at it as a renewable energy source. It's non-ending. The more you use it, the more you get, and the more you can continue using it. So that's really the framework for the book, and the if you will, the overarching arc that takes us from the struggle situation into a resolution of the struggle and continuing to grow through the experience.
And it's a wonderful visual for the process that can help leaders go through the current struggle and emerge more successful at the end. I was smiling when you shared the quote about "I reserve the right to be smarter tomorrow." One of the statements that I often share in seminars and in coaching is that one of my mottos that I have in my life is that I make new and different mistakes every day. And that's
indeed
what people do. They laugh. They're like, "You do what?" I said, "Well, I'm human, and it's going to happen. So rather than making the same mistakes, my goal is to learn from them, and I know tomorrow I'll make new ones." So they laugh and say, "Oh, well, you know, that's probably going to be true, isn't it?" Yes. And I think, you know, as you look at this and as leaders recognize that it's not about, and like you said, with the growth mindset versus the fixed mindset, it's not about demonstrating how great you are, because it's not about you. It's really about the success or the mission or the purpose of what you are leading, whether that's an organization, a team, a family, or your life. And it's about getting better at it. And when we take that mindset and we become, or we can connect with those people that we're leading as human beings, I think that also increases the trust that they have in the leaders that they're following, and recognizing that they are learning as well. Rather than so often we hear about the blame game, like whose fault was that, and no leader wants to raise their hand and say me, when actually taking accountability and responsibility makes a huge difference for the leader and for the group that they're leading. So you did a great job of explaining the pathway to adaptive energy. And I personally agree with you. I do think that it is latent in everyone, that we have the potential to increase our adaptive energy. There's a new buzzword that's been around the last few years about being more agile as a company, or agility in process of thinking or design. And I think as I was listening to you talk about adaptive energy, it brought agility to mind, that when we have this adaptive energy, we can be more flexible, more agile in the situations in which we find ourselves. Does that resonate?
Yes, I completely agree with you that agility is one component of adaptive energy, but there are many other components of adaptive energy. Another example would be the social connection that we have with others and finding support from others. That's one of the grounding practices that I didn't describe this, but I wanted to come back and talk about this, because so often when we're in a difficult situation, we don't go out and seek the support and guidance from other people who can give us a barometer on and a second opinion about the situation and maybe help us see other possibilities. And what I found through, you know, some of the research that I'm doing is that when we do have this social connection, when we do have a social support system for us, then we can engage more productively and focus our adaptive energy more. And so in addition to agility, this social support is an important component. And also self-awareness is an important component, to be able to monitor yourself and see and notice when you're out of balance. So that's another important component. So there are many different facets to this adaptive energy. And my my goal in describing this concept and also illustrating through so many of the stories how many different leaders engage in so many different strategies and practices that are all getting at this underlying quality. You know, my favorite example of this is Steve Jobs. You know, it's not well known, but Steve Jobs completely failed his first time out of the chute. When he was first at Apple, when he founded Apple, he got himself into big trouble. And it was only because of that failure that allowed him the wisdom to know what he did wrong, and when he came back to Apple the second time, he reinvented himself. He made himself into a different leader, used a different set of practices, and he became the great leader that we know of him that he was before he passed away at an untimely and early age. But, you know, we don't realize that the young Steve Jobs was a complete mess. It was a disaster. This guy was self-absorbed. I mean, you talk about the amygdala getting in the way. And this guy had incredible baggage. And over the years, he learned how to channel his energy more productively and more adaptively. And I think it was, or my hypothesis was that it was because he learned how to use meditation as a more effective channel, because he was a long-time meditator, and he learned how to use meditation really to channel this energy more productively and more adaptively, to engage his reflective mind and to disengage from this fear response that really haunted him during the first time of his career.
You did that wonderful segue into some of the practices in each of those areas, because I was going to head into becoming grounded. So great minds think alike. And thank you for illustrating that adaptive energy is deeper than agility, that there is so much more to it. So the support system is a critical one. In my work with the Saving Superwoman Project, one of the areas that we talk about is that while women are great at giving support, they are not so great at asking for it. Because that they're supposed to be taking care of other people. And men are also not great at asking for support because they're supposed to be the strong providers. And so that those natural tendencies result in missing a key component in that grounding practice to connect with other people, because you've probably heard you can't see the forest for the trees. And that's another one that I use often, is that when we're standing next to the pine trees, we are not able to see the way out of the forest or to see where the water is. So if you've got someone else who can give you that shift in perspective that you talked about, or to look at where their options might be, or to challenge that monkey mind that may be driving your perspective, then you're missing out on a key piece. So I was glad to see that you had included support as part of that grounding process. The other one, there were two, actually the tension map I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about. Could you explain that concept of a tension map?
Well, yeah, that's a really good question, Melanie, and let me do that verbally, but also let me suggest that your listeners actually go to my website at SnyderLeadership.com, and on that website I have there's a place you'll see, there's one of the sliders that will take you to a place that will allow you to complete the adaptive leader profile, which is a pilot that I'm working on now to automatically and statistically assess a attention situation and actually draw attention map. Now the instrument is not completely ready, but I'm looking for people to participate in the pilot, and when I do have all of the norms and everything, I can actually get the reports back to people. But let me describe it conceptually the way it is in the book, as a way of hopefully enticing people to go to my website and take the adaptive leader profile. The attention map starts with the realization, as I mentioned from my research, that one of the elements of leadership struggle is that there are a set of underlying tensions. And from my research, I found four tension points. One dealing with the past, and I call that tensions of tradition. One dealing with the future, and I call that tensions of aspiration. One dealing with outward tensions, when trust breaks down, I call that tensions of relationships. And one dealing with the inward tensions of our own leadership identity, tensions of identity. And so let me illustrate maybe just one of them, tensions of relationships. That's when trust breaks down and we no longer trust the people who we're working with, who we're engaging with, and that can be a very, very difficult situation and create a lot of tension for both parties. You know, in short, it's not a fun thing. And so really when you have a high level of tension of relationships, when trust breaks down, one of the things that you want to do is you want to work to find ways of restoring trust and really engaging constructively in a dialogue, in a conversation with the other person. You know, I mentioned before this conflict blind spot that we find ourselves in when there's conflict. Well, that's when there's high tensions of relationship. That's when we're most likely to experience this conflict blind spot. And that's when it's so important to take a step back and realize that we are distorting our reality by reaching the spontaneous conclusion that everything the other person does is wrong and everything we do is right. And that's just not the way it is so often. We have to recognize that this is a two-way street. We need to take responsibility for our own behavior and realize how we're contributing to the tensions in the situation, as well as recognizing that the other person might have a set of legitimate concerns. And if we can put ourselves in the other's shoes, if we can have empathy and compassion for the other person, as I mentioned, how Hubert Jolie at Best Buy did for Dick Schultz, the founder of Best Buy, you can really break through that and really find a solution that's far better than if you're operating from within the shackles of this conflict blind spot. And so just to tie it back to the tension map, if we see ourselves high on this dimension of tensions of relationships, then we want to take action to navigate this, to break through this and reduce the tensions, to express our own humility, to recognize that other people may be in the right, and really show compassion and empathy for others. And, you know, you can be absolutely flabbergasted. It's amazing what happens, what great things happen when you just take that one simple step. But it's hard because, you know, our ego is all invested in this. All of our self-righteousness is really invested in the fact that we're in the right. So it's really hard to let go. And underlying that, of course, is the fear. And if we can get let go of the fear, then boy, we're in a really much better situation. We can have a lot more fun in our leadership, and we can get more better results.
Absolutely. And to guide people in completing that tension map, in the book you have questions in each of those areas related to tradition, relationships, aspiration, and identity, so that as people can begin to assess where the tensions are. That's, again, awareness leads to choice. That's one of the favorite cartoons I use in seminars, is that you can't choose what you don't know exists or what you don't know is happening. So that awareness is key. So, and I want to come back to you before we close the show to the resources on your website. But believe it or not, we have only about 10 minutes left. Time flies and we're having fun, and I hope my listeners are as well, because this is very informative, Stephen. So I do want to, in addition, talk about the second phase. So once, and I know it's becoming grounded is a large section of the book, because that's, we often just want to race right through the fix it, and we practice the importance of becoming grounded. can really form the foundation for the success moving forward. Then in the second section of the book that's exploring new pathways, you've talked a little bit about overcoming blind spots. You talked a little bit, because two of those processes relate to vision. One is to reimagine the situation to discover a new creative path, and one is envision common ground. Can you talk a little about a bit about the power of visualizing something different?
Yes, you know, I when we remove our blind spots, that's when the magic starts happening. And this conflict blind spot that I was talking about, when we remove that conflict blind spot and actually more clearly and more empathetically engage in a conversation with another person, then we can find common ground. And it's so important that we do that. And I think you're referring to that section on transcending conflict, where there's it's so important to envision this common ground that we might find with people who we are in opposition to and who we might call enemies, but really they're just other people who are trying to do what they think is right, and if we can see their situation as legitimate, then we can find a better solution for all of us. I do want to mention just briefly this last, which I really feel is the kind of one of the most important points in the book, where we begin to assess among three options. I call it recommit, pivot, or leap. We can either, once we've grounded ourselves and seen the situation for what it is and tried to work through some of the conflict, we realize that we can either recommit to a situation or we can pivot, that is, change the situation slightly and move to a different situation, or we can take a leap and actually move to a completely new situation. And really, there's no right answer. It really depends on the situation and what's right in that particular situation for you. But those are the three options that I found that leaders often choose among. And it's important to have that part of our vocabulary.
I think that does give people the languaging around the options that they have to address the situation, because sometimes when we're little, we're taught, stick with it, persevere, quitters never win and winners never quit and all those kind of things, and those end up becoming ingrained in our belief system, when the reality is that sometimes the best choice is different than persevering. And so the fact that you have the recommit, pivot, or leap as all three being options opens the doors of possibilities in this Explore New Pathways area of adaptive energy.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last part three, focuses on deepening your adaptive energy to realize the leadership potential. And so let's talk for a couple minutes about the practices in the deepening adaptive energy.
Yeah, I think really once you start engaging and moving down this path, you start to really start to be able to do a whole lot of new things. And the first thing that I encourage people to do is to begin peering into the future and envisioning what that future might be. And I think when we do reading, it stimulates us into thinking about the future in a different way. I remember Bill Gates used to do this Think Week, which he used to take at that time. It was a mountain of books. Now I'm sure it's all electronic. But you just used to take it and actually just go through all these books and digest them, and getting away from the situation. And that helps you, see new things about the future and also see how you can get around some of the challenges that you're facing. And so really that last section of the book is all about how to take this adaptive energy and make it even more broad and more deep and more fulfilling than we've had in the first two sections.
And I have to point out that one of the practices is celebrate what's precious. We often get so busy and so focused on fixing problems and finding solutions and what's wrong with things, we forget the importance of celebrating what is precious, what's valuable, what was successful. And so it was very heartwarming to see that in that section.
Yeah, and even if you're in the midst of a struggle, there are things that are precious. There are gifts, many gifts, and if we can see them and we can celebrate them, life would be so much better for ourselves and for others.
That it would. So as our time is quickly winding down, as I was researching on your website, SnyderLeadership.com, that's SnyderLeadership.com, there is a resources tab which includes the adaptive leader profile that you talked about. It includes some mindfulness meditations and then also a link to purchase your leadership journal. Real quickly, can you talk a little bit about the mindfulness meditations and the leadership journal?
Yeah, I have on the website some meditations. Some of them are meditations. They are my favorite meditations that I use, all the time, and I just posted them on the website to share with them with my readers, and found actually I'm getting feedback. People are starting to use them, and they're actually starting to get into it. Some people who've never been into meditation, and meditation is not for everybody, but I would encourage everybody to at least try it and experiment with it. And also, it's important to keep a notebook or journal, and I have a resource tab that if you're interested in a journal, you can contact me, and we'll get you one.
Wonderful. So I am honored, as I said at the start of our interview, Stephen, to interview at this point with the launch of your book being so recent and to support you in sharing this powerful leadership development resource with my listeners and with others who come upon the book or in my conversation with my team. Are there any upcoming events or other ways that listeners can participate with you in this topic?
Well, first of all, I would encourage you all to follow me on Twitter at Stephen, S-T-E-V-E-N, underscore J, underscore Snyder, S-N-Y-D-E-R. Follow me on Twitter and on my website. I have all of my speaking events and also connect with me on LinkedIn. I've got my LinkedIn, a place for you to connect on LinkedIn as well.
Wonderful. And Stephen, what is a question you wish I would have asked you but didn't?
Well, you know, I think almost out of time, but there are some very important organizational implications of all of this, and I'd be more than happy to talk to those listeners who are engaged in human resource functions in an organization, how to really tap into some of these concepts and really the pivot points in leadership development and what we've learned about how we can really focus resources to help leaders more productively engage in their challenging assignments. And so there are a whole bunch of organizational implications about this. Obviously, we don't have time to talk about them this evening, but feel free to contact me.
Well, and I may be contacting you because that's the field I work in. So if you had a few minutes to talk about one of them, we could run over, that's fine, because I know now you've just intrigued a group of people who are very interested. So could you share at least one organizational implication?
Well, you know, I think we all have, organizations have really grown accustomed to developing based on a leadership competency model or strength-based development. Those are the two main strategies in large organizations right now. And I think what this struggle lens teaches us is that there's this whole new way of capitalizing on our experience as we're going through challenging assignments, and that underlying a challenging assignment, there are these pivot points where that if we exert a small amount of effort in helping leaders prepare for a challenging assignment or engage in the challenging assignment or debrief from the challenging assignment, that if we focus our developmental resources and energy on those three pivot points, then we can actually get the most in terms of most bang for our buck in terms of our leadership development resources, and also have the most effectiveness in terms of helping leaders grow when we want them to grow. And really, I call this concept pivot point development. And each of these three pivot points have opportunities for intervention and for leadership development opportunities that we may not be thinking about as we go through our traditional models of leadership development.
Thank you for sharing one, and now I'm intrigued about the rest, so I will follow up with you. Before we go, Stephen, What are one or two key messages that you would like listeners to take away from our discussion tonight?
Well, the first and most important thing is that you're not alone. If you're having a difficult time, if you're struggling, then you're not alone. Everybody does, and this is an important and natural element of leadership. And what we want to do is embrace that, and we want to engage in it, and view struggle not as something to be ashamed about, but rather as an art to be mastered. And when we do that, all of these possibilities that I've been discussing for the past hour, they really open up. These are possibilities that we don't see when we're in the midst of things and we're thrashing. And so really what I'm asking us all to do is take a step back and really recognize that struggle is not something bad, but rather an art to be mastered, and embrace it. And I think also that when we do that, we find ourselves more fulfilled and more capable in our leadership, and we're better leaders. And finally, you know, if we find that each of us probably know a whole bunch of others that are going through challenging experiences as well. And so just mentioning the book, you know, to our friend who might need a lifeline could be a very good way of supporting them during a difficult time in their life. And I know we all know people who definitely and dearly need this book right now.
Absolutely, and I will be sharing it as well. Thank you again, Stephen, so much for a very informative, enlightening, and exciting interview about the possibilities to be able to master the art of struggle. So there's a link to get the book and to Stephen's website in the show notes. And the book, again, is Leadership and the Art of Struggle, How Great Leaders Grow Through Challenge and Adversity, and so do the rest of us. So I highly recommend this book, and thank you again so much, Stephen, for investing the hour to share your insights and highlights with our listeners.
Thank you, Melanie. It's been a pleasure.
And listeners, do come back, because we are looking forward to bringing you some more exciting authors and resources that could spark a positive change in your life. Please take action on something you either heard from Stephen in tonight's interview, or buy the book, or check out the other resources on the website at SnyderLeadership.com. And choose to create an amazing day, because only you can make the contribution that you are here to make on this earth. You do have a unique purpose, and I encourage you to strive to identify and achieve that purpose. Until next time, stay safe.
Thank you for listening to Spark Radio with Miss Melanie. Please share this show link with those you believe would enjoy and benefit from listening. We invite you to join us for upcoming shows with special guests and more sparks. May a spark you heard ignite a positive change in your life. Good day.